back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
KDArmor.com is your one-stop shop for the most affordable body armor period. With packages starting at $169.99 and free shipping on every order. KD offers soft armor and rifle threat rated armor up to level 4. Go to KDArmor.com and get your body armor today while you still can. Mention this ad and receive a free tactical scarf for a limited time with any body armor package.
Hey preppers and patriots, this is the second half of my interview with David the Good. Enjoy the show.
I follow you on Twitter, and you put some really, really good stuff out on Twitter, and a lot of people don't. There's a lot of garbage on Twitter, so it's nice to have somebody putting out useful information very often. And I think it was today you tweeted about bird feeders, and you put bird feeders around your garden, and they also, they're eating the insects.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, I wrote that I didn't used to care about birds. It was like, well, birds are not all that useful to me, you know, it's sort of like a brutal utilitarian view. Well, the birds are probably stealing my blueberries, so I don't really want birds. But then as I started to look into it, some of those birds are constant, nonstop insect eaters, like the Carolina wren or the bluebird. And so a couple of years ago, I had this idea. I thought, why don't I start bringing birds deliberately in, just like I was already doing with the insects, and make habitat for the birds? Something that's very interesting that most people don't realize is that when the forests were getting cleared out west and people were hunting a lot of the various birds that were in the woods, some of the forests started to decline because the bird populations were declining. And so the declining bird population actually led to a declining forest. And the reason is that those birds would go out to the fields and to the prairies and they would eat all day long. They would go eat insects. They would go eat seeds. They'd go eat whatever they were going to eat. Then they would come back to the trees and they would roost at night and they would drop their manure at the base of the tree. The tree gets fed. The tree provides a place for the bird to live. The bird, in return, feeds the tree, and neither of them know even what they're doing, but there was a design there. And so the more birds that are coming into your property, they're bringing fertility from all of your neighbors' yards. You know, a worm is loaded with nitrogen, and whatever the bird doesn't consume goes out into its manure, and it comes into your yard. So, yeah, there are some birds that are a pain in the neck, and they're a pest, but I overplant on purpose, and I plant a lot of the little native berries, or the birds will actually plant seeds in my yard all the time. I've got little beauty berries and wild cherries and things like that coming up, wild plums, because the birds drop their manure and, you know, they drop the seeds behind and it grows. So when I see those things and they're kind of in a corner of the yard, I go, you know what? Just grow here. And then those fruits attract the birds often more than my cultivated crops. So yeah, absolutely. You know, you bring the birds in and let them work for you.
That's fantastic. Now, also in Grow or Die, you talk about food preservation. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a lot of the food preservation methods of the past have been mostly lost. I mean, when you go to the store and you buy a jar of olives or a jar of pickles, and you think, oh, yeah, see, I'm buying pickles. And people read, oh, it's a fermented food. It's not really a fermented food for the most part anymore. When you go to the store, it's a dead food. It's you know, you pour the vinegar on. And, you know, if you were going to make pickles the way they made 100 years ago, okay, this is pre-refrigeration for the most part. You know, people were putting ice blocks in their fridges and stuff. So the way they preserved food was to put it in a salt brine. And they would pack those cucumbers in with a few spices and with some salt into some salt water in a barrel and then cover the top of it. And what would happen was the cucumbers would ferment and they would turn into pickles. And the salt that's in that water, that salt brine, drives out the decay organisms but allows Acetobacter and Lactobacillus and other vinegar-producing bacteria to live. So they'll consume some of the sugars out of the cucumbers and they excrete vinegar or, you know, acetic acid, just like yeast will consume sugar and excrete alcohol. The acetobacter will, you know, consume sugars and alcohol, and they excrete vinegar. So those, you know, those pickles might be 3 or 4 weeks or months old by the time they were brought to the store and they were sold as, you know, here's your pickles. You know, people go, hey, I know how to can, I know how to make pickles. And it's like, well, they stock up on vinegar and they put in their little package of pickling spice and they pour over the hot vinegar and they say, ta-da, look at, I made pickles. Well, in a grid down type of an issue or time, you know, that sort of, I'm going to go buy a package of seasoning and, a jar of vinegar and do it, you know, that doesn't make all that much sense. And, you know, I want people to learn how to do some of those traditional methods where if you just stockpiled a bunch of salt, you ought to be good. I've got a recipe for homemade sauerkraut in there that we've done a lot of time. I talk a little bit about drying and about different canning methods. My favorite method really is trying to grow crops that will stay preserved in the ground or in a root cellar. And then beyond that, drying and fermenting. And then the last thing is canning. I like canning, but canning requires some specialized equipment, and it also is somewhat expensive compared to some of the other methods.
And you mentioned you like things that stay in the ground. Are you talking about like potatoes?
Right. Like potatoes. Potatoes can stay in the ground for a certain period of time, but they tend to get torn up or chewed up. If I was living in the northern states, I would plant Jerusalem artichokes, because when I found in Tennessee, when it would freeze, I had Jerusalem artichokes growing in the backyard. It would freeze, the Jerusalem artichokes would freeze to the ground, and then I'd yank up the stems on a day where the ground wasn't frozen, or hack in and try to get to them when it was, and pull up, you know, a bucket of roots from underneath snow. You know, it was awesome. And they would just preserve in the ground because they've got their own antifreeze in the roots. So if I harvested it and then chopped it up and decided to ferment it or whatever else, that's way too much work. If I could go pull it right out of the ground. And now if you were down in a more tropical location like where I am in North Florida, I grow cassava or yucca. It's, it's a staple from South America and Africa, you know. And I'll grow that stuff, and the top of it'll freeze off, but the ground never freezes too hard here. So I can go dig up roots in, you know, February if I want to. And those roots stay fresh in the ground because they're surrounded. They're still alive and growing there, or just waiting in stasis for the spring to come. And so at that point, if I could go dig it out of my yard rather than having to chop it up and dry it or grind it into flour or anything else, then I definitely prefer that.
Can you do that with the sweet potato in our climate in the where the ground doesn't freeze?
Yes. You can often pull sweet potatoes out of the ground all the way through the year where the ground doesn't freeze. The only thing is that, you know, sometimes the parts touching the top of the ground will get ruined, and sometimes insects and things will get into it. But I had sweet potatoes actually carry over in the ground in Tennessee, which surprised me. But I had a deep mulch garden, and they came up again the next year from the tubers. So they weren't spoiled against all hope, you know. Yeah, sweet potatoes are a way to do that. They're perennial. African yams are excellent for that. If I was further north, I would be planting, turnips and – it depends on how cold it gets, but some of those plants will actually carry through the winter, and you can harvest them as needed.
And on the subject of sweet potatoes, I saw your video on making cuttings from sweet potatoes, and I tried that, and man, they just took right to the soil.
It's amazing.
They just sprouted right out.
Yeah, you can take one sweet potato from the grocery store, and with a little bit of patience, you could plant thousands of square feet from it. You know, once you get that sucker growing in a pot, each one of those little pieces of vine, you can cut yourself 6 inches off, make sure a node or two is in the ground. And yeah, I mean, they look like they're going to be dead. I mean, the day or two after you do it, they all wilt over and you think, oh man, you know, David didn't know what he was talking about. But after a couple of days, like they get their roots in the ground so fast, they start taking off. And the base of every one of those little stem cuttings that you take is going to root and become potatoes. I saw this down when I was in the islands, and you know, they just had rows and rows of vines. They just chopped them up in bundles and they were just sticking them in the ground by hand. And, you know, they'd come back and harvest 6 months later.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And you've actually got me started with a lot of things, trying cuttings on everything. So I'm just cutting pieces of everything off now and seeing if it'll grow. And I've got, for my coffee plant, I've got, two little sprigs of that, and it seems to be alive. It's not flourishing like the sweet potato, but it looks like it's alive. And then I did, some cuttings off my mulberry, and well, it just dried up. All the leaves dropped off, and, I pulled them out of the pots except for one. And I guess just out of sheer laziness, I left it there. Lo and behold, new green leaves started coming out of that dead stick sticking in the dirt. So, I mean, just out of sheer laziness, it's actually coming back to life. And, you know, just by leaving it alone, it's just life sort of finding a way there.
Yeah. You really never know. I mean, I've written quite a bit about how to make your own plants for cheap, because, you know, a lot of my food forest project, I propagated or grew myself. I learned to graft. I learned how to start trees from seed. I gathered and took cuttings from different sources. And with a little bit of thinking ahead, you can just duplicate over and over and over again. You find the original plant and then you just keep taking cuttings and moving it. And then you've got more money to use for your own homesteading than to spend on plant nurseries.
Yeah, I've been doing that too, and I did a graft for two different mangoes that I had started from seed. One took, and it's doing really well, and the other one didn't. I guess it's just kind of
that's the way it goes.
You just sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And then I did a clip from my blackberry plant, and it's just a dead stick sticking in the pot.
I'll tell you, the best way to start the blackberries is to take the tip. Just bend the entire branch down where it's, you know, so the tip of the branch is just sticking in the ground, and dig it like 6 inches down and just bury the end of it. So basically it looks like you have a hoop sticking out of the ground. If you bury those ends, there's a lot of growth nodules in the new growth. They'll put roots down, and then usually within a few months you'll have a little blackberry plant shooting up from the point where you buried the tip. Then you can cut it off the main plant and put it anywhere you want to. I took one blackberry plant and covered about 20 square feet, or more than that, probably almost 100 square feet of blackberries just by continuously burying the tips and letting them pop up again.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Now, should you do that in good soil, or just, you know, if you've got like kind of rotten Florida sand, can you do it in that, or should you do it over into a pot?
You can do it directly into a pot. I've seen people do that. I've had it do that on accident because I was growing blackberries next to other plants in pots when I had my plant nursery. And I found, you know, they would touch into another pot and they would just root right into there. It doesn't seem to matter that much how bad the soil is on the rooting. It may actually be better if the soil's a little more poor, because it forces it to put down roots to search for good stuff. But at that point, you know, just treat it like you would a baby plant. And put a little mulch around it, give it a little bit of compost, and it will shoot for the sky. I've actually got a raspberry that's propagated the same way, a tropical raspberry that's in my backyard garden. It's actually kind of gotten to be a problem because it's just shown up all over the place. Like, well, you know, if it wants to be a problem, we'll just have more raspberries and less of the other stuff we were growing there. You know, it's not really a loss.
And you had a tweet a couple weeks ago and on grafting tomatoes, and I said, man, this guy's just showing off now.
Yes, it's very possible to graft. You can graft tomatoes onto potatoes. You can graft tomatoes onto each other. I don't usually fool around with that kind of stuff. I find it entertaining. I'm much more interested in grafting things that last multiple years. You know, this spring I grafted, there's a wild plum in my front yard called a Chickasaw plum, and I grafted nectarines and peaches and cultivated plum branches onto this wild plum, and they all took. So, and I've got about 6 feet of growth out of each one of those grafts. If you look up David the Good on YouTube and look for grafting, I've got a couple of videos on grafting. I just simply could not believe that I was growing peaches out of the side of this little ratty plum tree.
So it's basically, it's like a fruit salad tree.
Totally, fruit salad tree. And you know, those are different. They're actual different species growing on different branches. They're in the same genus. You know, they're all Prunus, but you know, it's like, I can't believe that happened.
That's a cool thing, and you know, it's fun and entertaining and all. But for people that are really working with a very limited amount of yard space, and they're trying to maximize it, and they're trying to get the largest amount of variety in that small space, that's a very, very practical thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. And you know, people are scared of grafting, and they're also scared. I can't tell you how many times somebody said, oh, I don't want to get a mulberry because that mulberry will get like 100 feet tall. And I said, yeah, if you grow a native mulberry, it might grow 40 to 60 feet. However, if you saw the center of it out when it starts to grow tall like that and bend the branches sideways with a couple of cinder blocks or something, you can get it to do just about anything you want. You could train the growth of a tree to go sideways, you know, without, it's really not all that much work. You just teach it, you know, as it grows a little bit the first couple of years. I saw somebody had like 250 fruit trees in a 10,000 square foot backyard, and they were growing them flat against walls, like two dimensionally. They were growing them side by side, perfectly pruned, branches bent, you know, so they were alternating across from each other. And grafting. I mean, I've got an apple tree that I've grafted 3 or 4 different varieties of apples onto. I've got a loquat tree with a couple of varieties of loquats. I was grafting different varieties of mulberries onto my mulberry tree. I've got a fig tree in the front yard that produced fruit, but it didn't produce a lot of fruit. So I thought, oh, I like this other purple fig. So I grafted this purple fig into the side of the yellow fig tree, and it's growing. It's growing figs. And it takes just, you know, maybe an hour or two of fiddling around and practicing and, you know, a few failures. You know, it takes like 10 minutes to put a graft on a tree, but people are terrified of it. And it's just, you know, why not use what's there? Somebody will go, hey, that apple tree, I hate that apple tree. That crab apple, that's the nastiest tasting apples in the world. Let's cut it down and put in a real apple tree. Like, no, don't do that. That crabapple tree might have 25 foot of root growth going out to the side, and either side is established, it's happy, and you're going to take that tree out, plant a little seedling apple tree that's going to take 6 years to actually start bearing much of anything. You know, when you've already got a tree that's there, cut into the top of it, graft in a couple of pieces from somebody else's apple tree that you like, and it will use that massive root system that's already there, and you'll be getting apples in a year or two. And you'll be getting a lot more apples than you would if you tore it out and planted something else. And I've told the same people, okay, you know, you're afraid of growing trees from seed. You know, what if I planted a bunch of seedling trees and they all turned out terrible? It's like, well, you know, I don't want to wait. I don't want to do this. No, you just plant seeds all over the place, all around the edges of your yard. And if, you know, what does it cost you to stick some peach pits in the ground or plant some walnuts? It doesn't cost anything. You know, you just pop them in after you eat and you see what happens. You got these little trees coming up here and there. If one of them grows and a few years later makes some fruit that you don't like, well, you graft on top of it and use the existing root system. Or if it's too tight to another tree, you cut it down and use the wood in your smoker, put it in your rocket stove to cook a meal on. you know, there's not really a loss. You know, you can always top work it and graft it. The worst thing is just to not do things because you're a chicken.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yeah, you talked about the section in the appendix, the emergency quick start guide. Hopefully, folks that are listening to our show, they're going to get out there today and start honing their skills. Well, I guess if you're maybe up north and it's middle of winter and you don't really want to do that just yet, they're going to start first thing this spring. But for the procrastinator, the person that's inevitably just going to wait until game day, and they're going to need that appendix, that emergency quick start guide. Can you give us a couple of tips from that?
Yes. The thing, you know, it's the best time to start gardening, like you were saying, was, you know, in the past, you know. I tell people to prepare, how to prepare their space real quick. And, you know, here's your list of things you're going to need to do. One, prepare your space. Two, hunt for seeds. Three, hunt for fertilizer. Four, start planting. And you got to find a hoe. And you got to start fertilizing. You've got to maintain the plot. You've got to make sure you set aside about 15% of your plants for seed, and then you're going to store the harvest, and then, you know, you harvest and replant whatever's left. And then I give lists of which plants you're going to start at which time of year. So if you've got, you know, if it's late spring or summer, you might be planting beans or corn or okra or yams or things like that. If it's late winter, early spring, fall, when you've got to start this garden, you might be looking at beets or carrots or garlic. You know, or even rye or wheat, depending on your climate. It's really kind of like, I'll hold your hand and get you started. You know, when things are ugly, because I have planted so many gardens at this point in so many different places and helped so many people launch their gardens. For me, it's not scary anymore, but I know for somebody that's starting it out, this seems like it's a great big deal. And I just give you a real simple list of things. Here's what you want to do. Here's how you find seeds if you don't have seed. You know, here's how you ferment a little bit. Here's how you can fertilize if you haven't stockpiled any fertilizer. You know, don't panic. You just need to get in there. You know, I've had people tell me, well, if things get bad, I'm just going to go raid the Walmart. Like, yeah, you and 15,000 other people. You know, you better be planting some gardens, you know, just in case. So yeah, it's just a kind of a love letter from me to the person that is stuck in a crisis. And I'm like, look at brother, here's what you need to do, and here's how you do it. And it's just a couple of pages of your basic overview. And if they keep an eye on those steps and they follow them, they're going to have some food.
And like I've mentioned all through the interview, you know, you've got great material on YouTube. You're putting out useful information on Twitter. You're a prolific blogger. You're putting out new books all the time. So tell us, for starters, where can we go buy Grow or Die? And then tell us where to get the blog, how to follow on Twitter, and where are you on YouTube? Because, like I said, it's just you've got great stuff and you're putting it out in so many different channels. And folks that are enjoying this interview, they really need to go and follow all that stuff.
Well, thank you. On YouTube, you can find me under David the Good. So if you look up David the Good and you find, you know, a bunch of gardening stuff, that is me. And I've got about 2,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. So, you know, go and subscribe. The videos are entertaining. They're funny. They're generally pretty quick. And I try to give people nuggets of usable information. And I throw in the occasional really stupid song just to keep it funny. Then on Twitter, you can find me. I'm David T. Good. And if anybody follows you, which they should be doing, like I do, you'll be able to find me as one of your friends, too. My website, I post a new article every single weekday. I've been doing that for 3.5 years now. And I, you know, it's been great to see how the readership has grown and how much goodwill I've actually built up with people, because I just answer questions. If people come in, I answer their questions. And I interact with them. I'll answer a question on YouTube or I'll answer it on my blog. And there are gardeners on there that are so well informed at this point who follow me and debate and talk and give suggestions. Somebody will come in, a new gardener will come in and ask a question in the comments section, and it'll often be answered by the time I see it. Somebody else will pop in and say, oh, by the way, you could try this, you know. So that is thesurvivalgardener.com. And that site, you know, my goal was to give away a lot of information, and then at some point I'd put a book up for sale. So in 2015, I put a book up for sale, and it did well, and I got a deal with a publisher to do 5 more books. So we did, I did 3 more books in 2015. You know, people say, how can you write so much in a day? It's like, well, you know, how can you actually pull this off, and are your books any good? So, well, you can look and see I've got 5-star reviews, you know, tons of them on my books. But the way I do it is I just do it every day. When somebody asks me a question, hey, there's a great chance to write another good post or to add to a chapter of a book. And, you know, if you put out 3,000 words or so a day, it doesn't take long to write a good book. So you can find that on The Survival Gardener. All of my books are on Amazon under the name David the Good. You can find Grow or Die there, Compost Everything, Totally Crazy Easy Florida Gardening, and my Florida Food Forest book, Create Your Own Florida Food Forest, all up there. And, you know, I keep them affordable too. I have a deal with my publisher. All the Kindle versions are $2.99, and the paperback versions of Compost Everything and Grow or Die is not in paperback yet, but it will be in a couple months. They're just $9.99. And on Prime, it's free shipping. So we just try to keep it affordable and get people coming back.
David, thanks so much for making time to come back on the show.
Hey, I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
In the days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, a global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness, which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.